Katya, it's Halloween today, you know?
Really?
Supposedly. I mean, when people will listen to this, most likely it will be Halloween.
Let's see how it goes.
What's your biggest fear?
My biggest fear?
Mm.
On the spot.
Yeah.
I'm quite scared of dark water. I don't know why. It's something
dark
about
water. Okay.
The depths. You never the know depths. What's coming okay. up from the depths.
Okay, there will be no death coming up in this episode.
Oh, thank goodness. I'm glad to hear.
The Science Basement!
Hello, and welcome. You're listening to the Science Basement podcast, a podcast that we learn not all things science.
I'm your host, Giuliano.
And I'm your co-host, Katya.
And this being our Halloween special, we're obviously talking about a topic that is completely unrelated to Halloween whatsoever.
And not spooky in the least.
We're talking about attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder, or as most people know it as, ADHD. And to guide us through this condition, our guest is Lia Merzon, a PhD student in cognitive neuroscience at Aalto University, Finland. So, Lia, how are you today?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Quite fine. I mean, I had my some voice problems, some throat issues, but I think I'm good now. Katya, how are you today?
I'm good, thanks. Very, very excited for this episode.
So, Lia, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us what you do just briefly? Well, don't worry, we'll go through all the main heavy points later. Just tell us about yourself and your research.
Yeah, as Giuliano said, I'm a PhD student and I'm doing my research in translational cognitive neuroscience lab. And the name of the lab refers to the idea that we do research that can be translated from scientific laboratories to clinical practice. So we focus on topics that can be used in clinics to improve diagnostics and treatment.
Awesome. So today you're here to tell us about ADHD. Do you mind, like, assume we know nothing about it? Of course, both Katya and myself are neuroscientists, so we have a rough idea, but let's not be arrogant. Let's assume we know nothing. What is ADHD?
So ADHD is a condition that can be manifested in different ways. Some children with ADHD and also adults, but our lab work with children research mostly. So children with ADHD, some of them are more inattentive, and then they might have difficulties with, I don't know, remembering stuff, focusing on important topics, being focused on at the classroom, and misplace their things, misremember everything, and mix up everything. Some kids are more on hyperactive side. And this is more classical example. Probably we all know like this kind of classical example of ADHD boy who runs around like driven by motor and very, very active. Also, another trait that is characteristic for ADHD is impulsivity, when a person makes a lot of decisions without reasonable thinking.
It seems like you're describing me as a teenager, but maybe I'm just overthinking this.
Yeah, also, it is important that we compare children with ADHD with their age and gender group. So, of course, kids are more active than adults, but kids with ADHD, they are way more hectic and inattentive than their peers.
So, exactly. I think this is very important. So, it's not like, because everyone would say, oh, but every child is active and hyperactive and don't, you know, they can't focus on boring stuff. But the idea is that the ADHD diagnosis would arrive if the kid behaves more hyperactively than the rest of the kids of the same age, right? Did I understand correctly?
Yeah, exactly.
So how is ADHD diagnosed exactly?
So there are some tests that clinicians can use to support diagnosis, but the application in clinical practice is very limited. And the main thing that doctors use is clinical interview and some questionnaires. So if the child is old enough, then psychiatrist or doctor can talk to the kid themselves. Otherwise, parents asked, maybe sometimes a teacher, if it's possible to reach to a teacher. And of course, this kind of method is very subjective and depends on, like, for example, what the expectations of a parent, how the child should behave at that age, and how they interpret the problems. Also, it depends quite a lot of, like, how it was at the recent time, if the kid had maybe difficult week and had more problems than usual.
Yeah, because that sounds quite subjective. As in, so the doctor's mostly relying on interviewing parents, the kid when possible, and when possible, the teacher. But as you mentioned, maybe, you know, it might be that the kid is just going through some rough period. So it sounds like potentially it could lead to overdiagnosis. Is that a thing? Is that a risk?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's specifically overdiagnostics, because also some parents might be, like, other way around, a bit too skeptical or maybe too afraid about stigma and so on, and might try to deny the problems that the child have. So it kind of both ways.
So if anything, it might be underdiagnosed. Do you mean
yeah,
that?
It might be both. Definitely.
So I've also heard that boys are more likely to be diagnosed with ADHD than girls, particularly when they're younger. And I was wondering why that's the case.
Yeah, definitely. It is a thing, and there are several reasons for that. One is that before, in previous iteration of diagnostic manuals, that psychiatrists used the norms were based on boys and studies of how boys with ADHD behave. And as I mentioned before, it's important when we consider if this person should have a diagnosis, it's important to compare them with their age and gender group, because it is kind of extreme compared to their peers. And because our society treats boys and girls a bit differently, it is usual that boys and girls behave a bit differently. And then it is really unfair situation if we compare girls to boys' norms.
Yeah, it's super interesting to hear more about it. Actually, fun fact, I was actually diagnosed with ADHD not so long ago. So I was 25 at the time when I was diagnosed. So it's really interesting to hear more about how the procedure kind of goes in place and why some girls might slip through the cracks of the diagnosis.
Yeah, it also might be more difficult to spot people with more inattentive subtype of ADHD, because they cause less problems to people around. If you are very hyperactive, then it's usually very noticeable. And this kind of children, I don't know, maybe disturb people around more, and maybe, I don't know, break something or do something. And if somebody is just inattentive, then they kind of just sit there without disturb people that much. So it is usually later than people notice that, well, this kid seems to have some problems and they might need help.
And I guess there's also the, as you were saying, like how boys and girls are still socialized a bit differently. So girls are expected to sit more maybe than boys are allowed to be, a bit wilder perhaps still. So until now, we've heard that the usual diagnosis procedure for ADHD is through interviews with parents or teachers and with the child themselves. And I was wondering, since these are could potentially be a bit subjective, you mentioned about maybe the child's had a bad week or so. Are there more objective ways of diagnosing ADHD, or are there more objective ways being developed to diagnose ADHD?
That is a very good question, and that is one thing we are working on. So current tests that are now in use, they are a bit specific. For example, one test that is in use called continuous performance test. And in this test, the child is presented letters on the screen one by one, and each time when they see a letter, they should press a button as soon as possible. Except for the letter X, when they see X, they should inhibit their answer, do not do anything. And it is actually quite difficult, because when you all the time press a button, then it's kind of well automatized behavior, and you just press button again, even if you know that, you know, you shouldn't do it now. And it is quite long. It takes like usually the full version, if I remember correctly, it takes 15 minutes. So you 15 minutes sit down and press a button. One thing is that the children do not like it much, and they sometimes refuse to do that. Another thing that some children with really serious problems do not get any abnormal results in this test. They might be able to perform quite well, actually, like comparable to typically developed kids. And the thing there is that when we have problems in real life with attention, it is usually more complicated situations than just, you know, reacting to one specific stimulus, to just pressing one button. It's usually situations that like demand us flexible allocation of our attention, shifting from one task to another, coming back if we were distracted from a task. These kind of things are not directly included in this test. So we are trying to create something that would actually take that into account.
So as far as I understand, there are some relatively objective tests to diagnose ADHD. However, it feels like ADHD itself is very heterogeneous. You mentioned that there might be kids with ADHD which might manage to perform well in these tests, therefore not allowing their diagnosis, whereas other kids with ADHD might perform less well, if we can say that way. So it feels like these tests are not 100% efficient. What are you guys at Aalto University doing about this?
Yeah, exactly. It is a huge problem. And as you mentioned, kids with ADHD, it is a very heterogeneous group, which means that all kids with ADHD, they might be very different. Some of them are inattentive, as we talked, some are more hyperactive, some have some symptoms, and other kids with ADHD might not have them. And these tests, because they simplify situation a lot, they do not allow us to detect these nuances and variability. And what we are doing in our group, we are trying to bring more real life, as we say, in testing of attention deficits. Our team has developed a VR game that simulates everyday life situations where kids with ADHD might have problems.
So virtual reality for ADHD kids, right?
Yes. Yeah. We have a game in which they need to do different kind of tasks, and we observe how they manage it and have very, very accurate, very precise recording with high sample rate of all their actions, movements, and where they look and what they do, everything. So it allows us to track precisely if any problems manifests during the play. So in our game, which my colleagues developed, we have a virtual apartment where the child can move around, play with objects, like manipulate them, do stuff. And it has several tasks. And in the beginning of every task appears our magical dragon, which gives instructions to the kid.
Oh my God, magical dragon. A magical dragon.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I think it is very cute. Yeah, so the dragon tells a legend first. For example, now it is a Friday morning. You just woke up. You need to make your bed. You need to eat your breakfast. I don't know, prepare for school, pack your stuff. Also, usually there are a couple of elements included that are not related to legend. So it also load memory a bit more. Like, I don't know, call your grandma before you go.
I have a silly question. Does the dragon have a name?
Yeah, she's Laura.
Laura, the dragon. Okay. Okay, cool. Thank you.
You're fun.
I hope I remember it well, because all instructions are in Finnish. I sometimes remember everything a bit vaguely. Yeah, so in this apartment also, there are a lot of things to distract the kid. we put some there on purpose. There are colorful toys, there are drums that you can play music on, there are different like TVs that you can watch, music that you can listen, different things that can move, produce sounds, and so on.
So a lot of distractors, so, basically.
Distractors, attractive toys, stuff like that. There are also additional noise that also distract kids, like urban noise from outside the window that you could kind of hear in this apartment. There is a fly that flies around and buzz, which is super annoying. And we are kind of proud of that. We not only see how successful the kid in performing the task in a way that they might be able to do that, but also we see how much they were distracted during their performance, how much of additional unnecessary actions they made, and how they allocate their attention.
So if I've understood correctly, you have the VR apartment and the child has the quest. They have like a main quest that they need to go and complete. So it would be calling their grandmother or folding their laundry. But not only do you see how well they complete the test, like the main, not the test, sorry, the main quest, but also how many side quests they go and do.
Yeah, I would say so.
And what exactly are you measuring when you said you see like how much they move and these kind of things? And what are you specifically doing?
We measure a lot of things, starting with just how much they physically move, because we can detect how much they move their head and how much they move a controller. And that is quite a straightforward measure for hyperactivity. But there is also other stuff. For example, we calculate how efficient they are, in a way how much they deviate from optimal implementation of the task. Also in my study specifically, we measure where they look at. In VR headset that I was using, we have built-in eye tracking system, so we can track where they are looking at. And there's information about how, like, actually how they move their eyes, where they're looking at, allow us to improve prediction of diagnosis. My colleague was doing his study, like, using behavioral measures. How much they move, what they do, and so on. And that produced actually quite nice result. But also, by like we saw in my study, is that by adding information about their eye movements, we can even better distinguish children with ADHD from typical developed kids.
So tell me if I got this right. So your group is developing a VR game, a virtual reality game, to simulate a real life scenario as much as possible, with a dragon called Laura, which I absolutely love, where you test the kids, which undergo specific tasks, and you try to measure how much they move and how efficient they are in trying to relate those to the diagnosis of the ADHD, right? Did I get this right? Okay. And you specifically are trying to see whether by tracking the eye movement, you can predict an ADHD diagnosis. Did I understand correctly?
Yeah, exactly.
So the idea is that if you realize, if you manage to prove or to see that the a specific eye movement pattern can be a predictor, a good predictor for ADHD, then this could be a new diagnostic method. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, before it might become a diagnostic tool, it needs additional tests. But yeah, that is like our ideal aim, that it will help in diagnostics in real clinical practice. And already now we can see that using eye movement patterns allow us to detect which kids have ADHD and which doesn't. But the thing is, we can do that based on eye movement patterns in specific situations. It's important that it is a situation that imitate real life, because we were testing also if we can detect reliably kids with ADHD based on other VR games that are having nothing to do with real life at all, and accuracy there is much lower. So we hope that this kind of eye movement pattern can become like a biomarker that help diagnosis of ADHD.
Cool. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, further studies are needed. That, you know, I guess that's your job. That's why you're there. So, okay, the eye tracking, it sounds like it's showing very optimistic results. What about the rest, the whole VR setup thing? So measuring the movements and the efficiency, how is that going? Is it working?
Yes, that is going pretty well. And we continue expanding our research. But also, I think it's really cool thing that we also have a pilot in clinic, in a hospital. And for me, it is really important, and for colleagues who are doing that, because one thing is to create some things that has a good potential in the lab. Another thing is to adjust it for clinical needs, because clinicians have their own requests and their own limitations of the practice. Like, for example, how much time it takes? Is it realistic to apply the thing? Does it fit the appointment time? Is it too complicated? Is it too expensive? This kind of things. We are trying to test that actually the things that we came up with can be used in real life diagnostic.
Yeah, I can imagine that if something works well in a lab, but then it's impractical in a proper clinics environment, you know, if it's too expensive, or as you said, if it just doesn't, it's too long and it would just clog the whole healthcare system, I guess that makes it a bit less useful. So it's good that you guys are testing this. It's really cool.
That sounds really interesting and very cool. And I think it's very important that we are moving forward with diagnosing kids with ADHD, since it can start causing a lot of trouble later on, and I think issues with a child's self-esteem as well as such. So it's good to catch these things early. It leads me to think, what's the next step? Is there, you know, anything for adults, for example, since, you know, I made it all the way to 25, and I've heard many other similar stories of people getting diagnosed even later in their 40s or 50s with ADHD.
Is there, even as an adult, I want a VR game with a dragon thing.
I would love to go. Where do I sign up? This is very cool. So is there anything similar being done for adults, or anything else being done in terms of diagnosing adults with ADHD?
Yeah. Actually, we have also a pilot study that applies similar paradigm for adults. But for adults, it is a bit more complicated, because many people develop some coping mechanisms, how they can manage even if they have some attentional problems. So it is. It seems that it is a bit more tricky to find right way to detect their symptoms. But yeah, that also can be moved forward by using VR.
Okay, so we are still getting a VR as adults, right? Can you confirm this? I want a VR!
As soon as there is a VR, I think, you know, people will be running in excitement to come see what's up.
Yeah, because there's plenty of VR games. Well, not plenty. Well, don't get me started on the VR gaming. But there is already, you know, a market for it. But if you have a VR game where you can justify, say, oh, the doctor told me I have to use it. I mean, that's the dream, isn't it? I can imagine that, as you said, adults who grew up and spend years and years of their lives not knowing they have ADHD, but surely they noticed that they had issues in focusing and keeping the attention high and keeping calm and keeping still. So I can imagine after many years, you develop coping mechanism, as you mentioned. So an adult might still perform really well in tests that are meant and designed for kids. Because they're adults, they kind of can we call them experienced ADHD people? So they might be able to somehow, they might be able to somehow bypass their condition and still perform. So I can imagine how you have to adjust the test to compensate for this. Well, Leah, it's been so much information. Thank you so much. But now this is the closing moment where we just give you the stage, virtual stage. If you want, I can give you the demon voice filter. We probably don't need that. That's good. Yeah.
Maybe not.
But... No, not the demon voice filter.
Yeah. So we'll give you now 60 seconds. Katya and I will close our microphone. We won't interrupt you. And this is your chance to tell the audience whatever you want them to know and to remember about what you do. 3, 2, 1.
Today we were talking mostly about children, but only one third of the kids kind of overgrow their ADHD. And as we mentioned before, this condition also affects adults. And if you feel that you have more struggles than your peers, if you feel that you have some attentional problems and that you need to put more effort in doing everything, like everyday life stuff, than other people can just manage, then I wanted to ask you to reach out for help, to reach out to a clinician, to your GP. It depends on how it works in your country, because that might not be ADHD, that might be a different thing, but anyway, it's important to get proper help.
Thank you. That was lovely. This could be our take-home message. Anyone at any age can be diagnosed with ADHD. So if you notice... Basically, what Leah said, if you notice any difficulty in your everyday life, just reach out. You might get a VR game. Who knows?
That would be super exciting. And I think a very important message, exactly, that help is out there. And, you know, everyone, take care of your mental health as well.
And research is still going forward and trying to make diagnosis even more accurate. So one day, in addition to interviews, And cognitive test, will use things like eye tracking and high movement and whatever Leah is working on. So good luck with your research. But don't leave
Thank
yet.
You.
Don't leave. The episode is not over. At the end of our episodes, we always have a scientific fun fact that may or may not be related to the topic of the episode. Doesn't really matter. So Katya, what's the fun fact of today?
Today's fun fact is not related to today's topic. I thought I'd go branch out a little.
Want the demon voice filter?
No, thank you. I was trying.
It's just, I give it a go.
You can say goodbyes in the demon voice filter. My fact is actually about the liver today. So we know that the liver's job is to remove various toxins and poisons from your body. And, you know, given that, it makes a lot of sense that the cells in your liver have to renew a lot and you have to get a lot of new cells all the time. But it's never actually been looked at how old the liver is on average, therefore, because, you know, you're getting a lot of new cells all the time. So how old is the liver on average? But they've now looked at it. So at the University of Dresden in Germany.
Let me guess. They cut the liver and they counted the rings. Like we do with the tree.
Like the tree. No. No, actually, they used a form of isotope, like an isotope, radioisotope method. It was very interesting. We'll link the paper in the description as always. But yes, so actually you can guess. How old do you guys think that the liver and the liver cells are on average in like any adult human? Because it's actually the same age. You know, if you're an adult, it's always the same age.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I'm not giving the answer yet, but for example, it means that every adult, regardless of their age, their liver would be, for example, 2 weeks old.
For example. If you're like 20 or if you're like 64, okay, your liver should be approximately the same age, give or take.
Okay. Leah, do you want to give it a go at guessing first?
I have no idea.
I wouldn't have guessed this.
Never thought about it, you know?
Exactly.
I'm pretty sure there's a way to infer or deduce this, but I'm not that smart. So I'm just going to literally randomly guess and say 6 months.
Okay, 6 months. And Leah, just do you want to say a random age?
I don't know, a year.
A year. Okay, so So neither of you were quite right, but, you know, getting there. But it's actually 3 years old, approximately.
Okay.
Which is quite cool, right. I think, you know, no matter how old you are. I thought that was also a very cool fact that no matter how old you are, it's approximately 3 years. But that's not to say that all of your liver cells are 3 years old. Some of them, I figured that. Yeah, some of them can live up to even 10 years or so, or is what the research.
So the average age, let's say the age of every single cell and they averaged it and roughly is always three years old. Did I understand correctly?
This is how I understood. But I mean, I'm no expert in this field, so people can check the paper for the real stats. But yes, so that was my fun fact for today.
Thank you so much, Katya. That was quite a fun fact. Now we know our liver is on average 3 years old, no matter what. Okay, so this is the real end of the episode. Now we go. That's it. That closed. It's over. So thank you. Thank you, Leah, for all the information. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Katya, for joining me. That as usual, amazing co-host. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And now just go and enjoy your Halloween. If you're listening on the same day it's released, if you're listening afterwards, enjoy your day. If you're listening before Halloween, well done. That's a remarkable time travel. Anyway, I'm Giuliano Di Dio. This was a Science Basement podcast.
See you next episode.
Bye.
Bye. The Science Basement.
If you liked this episode, give it a thumbs up. Rate us on the podcasting app of your choice and don't forget to share it with your friends.
Or else I will come after you.
This podcast was produced by The Science Basement, a science communication organization based in Helsinki, Finland. Interested in being interviewed? Get in touch at podcast@thesciencebasement.org.